Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to Cult Talk with Aaron Martin, a conversation, not an investigation. Cult Talk is a podcast that explores the realities of cult life, how they operate, who joins them, why people stay, and how some members eventually find their way out. Season one of Cult Talk will focus on a little-known cult called the COBU, which stands for the Church of Bible Understanding, led by Stuart Traill. In episode 9 of Cult Talk, I finished my chat with Catherine Armstrong, an ex-COBU member who was recruited into the cult while still a high school student. In our second half of this discussion, Catherine talks about the cult's reaction to her departure and how Stuart Traill even tried to shame her into reconsidering. We also discuss the question every ex-cult member asks themselves when they get out: what happens now? Here's part 2 of my 2-part interview with COBU survivor Catherine Armstrong. Now, fast forward through the years, you stayed in the fellowship, but raised your own family and kept some separation, or,
right.
You know, how do we get to the end of your time there?
Okay. So what happened was years went by and I was a member, but I could control how much I was a member because I lived at home and we had 3 children by this time.
Okay.
And after a while, our marriage dissolved and my husband left, and it was a very, very painful time for me. Well, when Stuart got wind of how I was reacting to that painful time, he sent a message through someone, and I don't remember who it was, and he said, "When you're ready to get serious with Jesus, to let me know, you know?" So I remember hearing that and thinking, wow, I was in so much pain. Pain was just so much stronger than my commitment to the fellowship or
relationship with Stuart.
I was trying to survive as a single mom of 3 little children, not having a college education and not having worked. And I was, you know, was very like, what's going to happen to me now? And so when I heard that, it was actually a gift because it helped me to sever ties with him and the fellowship. I just thought, you know, he's crazy. I'm serious. I'm actually serious in my relationship with God. How come he doesn't know that?
Right. And for that to be his reaction during the most painful period, it's like no pastor in the world.
Right.
Who is
so
sane would ever react like that.
So true. So it's actually him being Stuart and being the narcissistic, unkind person that he was actually me recognizing that was just a gift. It helped me to just sever ties and say, yeah, I'm not into this anymore. Mm-mm. I got other fish to fry here. I'm trying to remain afloat in the storms of
good
life,
for you.
You know,
good
going
for you.
Through a divorce.
Absolutely. It takes what it takes too. I think that that can be a gift when you see just how nasty someone like that can be. You know,
because
it almost takes something extreme, and you are in extreme circumstances in your personal life. And then for him to react like that is
And the
just
the
telling.
Real truth is, so true. And the real truth is, I was never probably closer to God in my life than when I was initially going through my divorce.
That's awesome. So
those
2 things together helped you.
Yep.
Did you have support, or did you have to cut ties with everyone you knew in the COBU?
There were some. Yeah, there were some that I could rely on. But there was a point where I was actually helping some of the younger people in the Lamb houses. And Gail and I had gotten into a relationship where we were actually communicating with one another. She asked me to reach out to certain people and to try to help them. And of course, I felt honored to be asked by her, especially when she had,
been really so evil.
low of me before, like, oh, wow, I'm in her good graces now. Sure, I'll help, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so I just stopped. And it's all a little bit of a blur because it was such a stormy time in my life, such a painful time. But yeah, so that really helped me. And then I was on a journey to find other Christians who were sincere. And that's very difficult. That's what you hear from other people that have left, that it's hard to figure out, well, what kind of church would I fit into?
Yep. That was my family's journey as well.
Yeah.
It was 100% our journey after that, because you're jaded. You think, I don't know what to believe in. And then you also have those teachings that are so shame-based that everyone else is wrong.
Right.
You know, and nobody's doing it right except us. But when you leave that group, you're also rejecting that group who told you that. It's very confusing.
Right. Right. And some of the doctrines that we held as truth in the fellowship, if a church didn't hold that doctrine, then, oh, well, we can't join them.
Right.
You know, they believe that you're all once saved, always saved. That's one of the mantras. Stuart would call them contentious Christians. Any other Christian was a contentious Christian. And if they believed once saved, always saved, we couldn't go to that church because we all know we can backslide. You know, we've learned that.
Right. So how did you navigate that? Did you find a home somewhere else with another group of believers, or did you just kind of do it your own way?
I did. It was both, actually. Okay. I would take some time and invest in a certain church. And my children went to a Christian preschool. There I made some really great friendships and would go to their churches and found a lot of healing, to tell you the truth. A lot of healing.
That's good. You know what's interesting to me, and I don't know, give me your take on this from your experience, but I feel like people who leave Kobu experience something maybe a little different than, say, a Scientologist leaving. You know, first of all, Kobu is a total institution for most people. It wasn't for you, but for my parents, for instance, it was, where they had to leave their home, their jobs, their friends, and their church at once, which is difficult. You know, it's difficult in your case, obviously, too. But after that, you don't leave the belief system entirely, which is also very hairy. So what I mean by that is, when you leave Scientology, you reject the belief system and the I guess, what would they call it, the grip that the group has on you. So you're not going around anymore believing in that L. Ron Hubbard belief system anymore. But when you leave Kobu, many people remain Christians.
Right.
So you're not rejecting it wholesale. And so I think that can be, I don't want to say harder, because it's not, there's no, you know, everybody's got their own journey, but it can be really confusing to still want to be a Christian, but not that kind of Christian.
Exactly.
Do you know what
right.
I mean?
How you worded it was, you hit the nail on the head, because you want to be close to God and to other brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
You want that in your life. You want that sense of community, but you don't feel secure in any other place.
Right.
You just don't. It takes a long time to acclimate and to the loosen of the grip of the harsh doctrine that we were under. And then, of course, maturing as humans, getting older and seeing him for who he was, that was very helpful. But if you're young and you leave and you try to reach out and become a Christian somewhere else, you don't have that perspective of everything until you get older. You know,
right.
You just don't have that.
It takes years. And so for you, you did remarry. You're living your life now completely separate from anything like this. When you heard that Stuart passed away in October, what was your reaction? I mean, did you have a reaction?
Yes, I did. It's hard to describe, Erin. It really is hard to describe. It's almost like, oh, wow, something like that, you know? Because
It's kind of bizarre. Yeah.
It was just bizarre. It was just someone who had such meaning in your life, someone, you know, growing up, and he had such meaning in many, many ways, but not in a nurturing, kind, healthy way. Yet he certainly had an impact in my life. And truthfully, I'd been waiting for him to die.
Really?
I remember thinking, okay, so he's 82 now, and now he's 83, and he's, well, it won't be too much longer. And not like welcoming it, but just knowing that it was soon, and then wondering, you know, how had he changed? How had he softened? Had he at all? I doubt whether he did because of certain things I've heard. I mean, truthfully, that's kind of naive of me to think he would have changed because he was so delusional and narcissistic.
You know? And they only get worse with age.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Did we read the same thing maybe on our little ex-Kobu group that on the day of his death, he fell asleep and didn't wake up. So he died in his sleep. I'm not sure of what, but on the day of his death, he was having some kind of Skype conference call with people voting on their color codes, basically.
Were you in fellowship with Jesus or were you in fellowship with Judas? That type of thing.
Right.
And then they had to judge one another based on their interpretation. I heard that as well. The day before.
Sad. Up to his very last day, he was still doing that maniac stuff to people.
And how sad for those that still remain there, because I do know a few of them that are in there. I've tried to contact them over the years and it hasn't gone well because they've just been very judgmental and haven't wanted to talk. But how sad that they allow another person's view of them to be so instrumental in whether they have joy or whether they have shame. You know, it's very sad. It's so codependent. It's just pitiful.
That's why I wonder what's going to happen now.
Yeah, me too.
I wonder, is somebody going to take the reins? Is it just going to fall apart? I think being a leader like that, a cult leader, takes a certain level of mental illness. This is just me talking.
Right. So true. I totally agree.
I don't know that you can really do that if you're not ill.
Right.
In some way.
Right.
Truly.
Exactly. Right.
So I wonder what will happen.
Well, I do too. And I guess time will tell. Maybe we'll have a podcast about that in a couple of years.
I agree.
The people that leave will find out about this podcast and see how wonderful it is to talk to you. And then we'll say, yeah, I want to share. Here's what happens.
I would welcome talking to them. Anyone who wants to talk about this. I feel like this group has really gone under the radar for a long time, but it's it's been a lengthy hanger. I mean, there's hangers on that are still there 40 years later.
I had kept a scrapbook, and I have a scrapbook article of when we were in Time magazine. The fellowship was in Time. I'm going to have to look for that. Maybe I'll try to copy it and mail it to you.
I had no idea. I would love a copy of that.
Yes, absolutely. I've got pictures of old meetings and pictures of our high school newspaper where they were making fun of us with our buttons, the big Get Smart, Get Saved.
I had one of those. Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow. Interesting.
Did you ever talk about how we all got the buttons? You had to memorize the 12 verses in John.
My mom just told me that, Kathy. I couldn't believe it. I said, what? She goes, oh yeah, you earned it. She was joking. She said, it's like Girl Scouts, but not really.
Right. 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 And can you imagine? I know. Yeah, you earned it. After 12, it didn't take long to memorize those 12 verses. I still have them memorized, to be honest with you.
Do you still have the button?
No.
Okay, we don't either. I wish we did.
No.
We don't
have
it either.
Oh, I'm sure someone does.
I'm sure someone does. If anyone out there has one, please snap a pic and send it to me. I would love to see your button.
But do you know what it takes for a high school kid? I mean, high schoolers, they don't want to stand out. And for us to wear those buttons, oh my gosh, that really was hard for us. But at the same time, we just thought, well, this is how our light shines before men. See, we're not ashamed of Jesus. We're wearing Get Smart, Get Saved. See, so, but it really was hard looking back for sure.
What would you tell someone who you saw today? I mean, having come from this experience, what would you say to someone you saw going down this path or wearing one of these buttons or knocking at your door and saying words like this? I mean, and I don't mean what would you say to them directly, but what would be advice to maybe people in their lives who care about them or to them if they're starting to question things? Because I do want part of this podcast is, you know, just hearing the stories, but I want it to be helpful too to anyone who's out there thinking about leaving an oppressive environment. What do you do?
I love that question because I remember hearing you ask that in an earlier podcast and I kept thinking, what would I say? And I think what I would do is just have them follow their heart. If they are questioning, there's a reason they're questioning. If they want to leave, there's a reason they want to leave. And they just need to pursue a different perspective and to be kind to themselves and search for a different perspective, not to necessarily forsake everything that they've learned or had in their life, but there's got to be a reason that the questions are coming up inside of them.
Yeah, I would agree
with
that.
To listen to their gut and to, you know, to, are you open enough to explore someone else's experience? Let's look at a few of the people that have left that are happier now and successful and faithful and prosperous and feel whole. Would you be open to hearing their experience and how they arrive there? But knowing that it's not an instant fix.
Right. It's a process.
Yeah.
I think you're spot on with that advice, or at least that perspective. I agree with that. I think hearing from ex-members is the most powerful thing that can happen, or at least talking to them about your own experience. There's so much power in that, because what a cult does is they try to keep you away from those people as much as possible. Mm-hmm. By demonizing them and saying, oh, they've backslidden, they've, you know, walked away from God, or whatever they say in any group, you know, basically they're bad, we're still good. But if you can start reaching out and connecting with some of those people and seeing the reality of some of their stories, not everyone, you know, is doing great afterwards for whatever personal reasons. I think that's so helpful.
And also it's really tough for members that have been in there for so many years. I was there. I was a part of it for about 12 to 13 years. But the ones that have been in there 30 to 40 years, there's something about human nature in certain personalities where it's easier to go to an extreme than to live in the gray or live in the middle. Because living in the middle is harder. It takes more thought. It takes more analytical thinking. You know, if you just say, well, the Bible says this, and you're extreme, that's sometimes easier for certain personalities to live in. It's just, you know, who they are and what they've learned about life. It's their view of life.
Absolutely.
And it's harder for them to come away from those strict views about God. Because we were truly, the reason we were called the Church of Bible Understanding, in my view, is, I remember what you were saying about the Manson and the Forever Family. I don't know if it was because of that we changed our name, but I think it was.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
He was so into the Bible and verses in the Bible, but yet his interpretation of it, and it was so different from anything you've heard in churches, other mainstream churches.
Right.
It was deeper, and like you've said before, there were 12-hour Bible studies. I remember going to an all-night Bible study where we just kept giving out verses and tying in certain parts of the Bible where the old reflects the new and the new reflects the old.
Oh,
and
torture.
You know, things like that. Yeah. But I remember being really into it, though. I really was into it. It was so interesting to us. And half of them were asleep. I remember that. Some would just fall asleep in this big airport hangar, you know.
Oh my gosh.
But then some would just still take notes, or we'd sing certain songs. But when you look at the Bible a certain way, like if you want to come away from the fellowship and you don't go witnessing every night, then how do you deal with the verses in the Old Testament that say, cursed is he who does the work of the Lord with slackness? Well, how do you deal with that then? You know, well, am I being slack? Well, I'm not witnessing every night. So what kind of a Christian am I? But see, that's the thing. He would just pick and choose the verses that would tie in with his punitive view of God. And that's what we were fed, those verses.
Yeah. And I think you're right on when you say that it's easier to just buy into that black or white thinking than to start questioning it yourself. Because if you start questioning it, it becomes a richer discussion, and there's no one to discuss it with when you're in COVID.
Right.
There's no one to discuss it with you. It's either you're in or you're out.
And so, there's safety at an extreme.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
there's safety there for them. But it took me a long time to get there. What I'm telling you did not come, you know, didn't come quickly. It really didn't.
Well, that's how a cult operates on extremes.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm glad you're not in that in that headspace anymore, and that you found happiness in the gray area, Kathy.
Yes, me too. Me too. And it's amazing when you're open to other people who comes into your life. It's amazing the gifts who come into your life that you need when you're open to that. And that's what happened to me. I met some wonderful people. Wonderful people came my way. All of them healers in one sense of another or another. I can remember one woman specifically. Oh, she was just such a downtrodden woman, having gone through a divorce herself, living in poverty. We became very close friends. We walked every day. And I can remember telling her about the fellowship. And she would look at me and go, "What? You would, wait a minute. You would pray on your knees? Like, what are you talking about? You'd get down and pray on your knees." And I thought everybody prayed like that. No, you get down on your knees, you kneel, and you put your head on the floor. You don't lay prostrate necessarily, but you're like kneeling, and then you put your head on the floor, and you pray out loud. She's like, "What?" And just her reaction and her laughing at it was just what I needed. Right. It was just crazy. Right. It wasn't like I needed to sit down with a pastor and go, "Now, Kathy, you do not need to pray like that." It was like just these different people and their perspectives.
You just need to tell a random person, and they'll be like, "Excuse me?"
It'd be like, "What? How do you pray again? What are you talking about?" Like, just seeing that helped me so much. And I was like, "You don't pray like that?"
It's true. You know what? Involving the world in it, talking about it openly, I think that's super helpful, because you have to get some outside perspectives when you are wrapped up in the nonsense like that. I mean, and I've been in my own nonsense in other respects.
Me too.
You can't see it clearly.
No, you can't. You know, you just can't. You need friends. You need people who are committed to your well-being, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Well, Kathy, thank you so much for talking about this today. This is really great.
Welcome.
I think you have a good understanding of not only what happened to you, but how it can kind of happen to anyone. You know, the slow drip campaign that we've talked about with several people. And
well, it's been a pleasure. Truly has. Truly has.
We'll pause here for now, but join us for the continuing story on the next episode of Cult Talk. Also, join the listener conversation over on the Cult Talk with Erin Martin Facebook page. Follow at Cult Talk on Twitter and Instagram, and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast from any platform and leave us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. Cult Talk is written and hosted by me, Erin Martin, and produced by Dan McInerney. See the show notes attached to this episode for all links to resources and social media associated with Cult Talk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.